On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
And welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network, presented in part by Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. All right, the end of the baseball regular season has come, and now we get to the ACC tournament starting up this week down in Durham. Virginia will be the number six seed, so they'll play their first game Wednesday night, a late night affair at 9 p.m. We're going to talk a little bit about the end of the UVA baseball season, what they still need to do to get into the NCAA tournament, as well as this week's ACC tournament. Make a few predictions there on how the Cavaliers are going to fare down in Durham in this new single elimination format. But also coming up, I teased it last week, we're going to talk a little bit about the UVA football depth chart as this transfer portal class is coming nearer to a wrap up here. I got an article posting up on the saber.com later talking about the depth chart and going position by position. That's what we're going to do here on this podcast today. And to do that, talk UVA baseball, to talk UVA football, there's no one better to do it than Greg Badia from the Daily Progress. Greg, how's it going?
Yeah, Preston, good to be with you. I just am wondering, will the game actually start at 9 p.m. on Wednesday?
No shot.
You know, the ACC scheduled this thing where you got 4 hours for each game. Covering a good bit of college baseball the last few years, I'm probably going to think at least one of those games goes over four hours, right?
Yeah, that Boston College game earlier this year, that was almost like, what, four and a half?
Was a nine-inning game, too.
That was, I think it reached like the top five longest games in UVA baseball history, and they didn't, you know, go to extra innings or anything with that. So, yeah, you really never know what you're getting into a day at the ballpark. But let's talk about just how Virginia closed out this season. So obviously they get the series win over Virginia Tech in the Commonwealth Clash to close out the season. That means they won 12 of the last 14 games. Could talk a little bit about the performances down the stretch, but just – what did you make? I mean, we heard all season long from Brian O'Connor and anyone else on this team. They're like, you know, this team historically has done well when their backs are against the wall. And, you know, as much as, you know, you're like, all right, I don't know, the stats don't really show that y'all can make this kind of run this year. You know, the RPI looks a little tough. They still end up making as good a run as you can have in college baseball, winning 12 of the last 14.
Yeah, I mean, they were 20-15 after losing to Liberty for the second time this season on April 15th. And at that point, I mean, they just didn't have a resume good enough to get in to the NCAA tournament. Now they've played themselves back at least onto the right side of the bubble, I would think. You look at the projections. I think D1 Baseball has them as one of the last four in going into the ACC tournament. But what they've done has been really impressive, right? They've also, in addition to winning 12 of the last 14, they've won their last four ACC series. And that started even before that stretch, right? They took two or three from Pitt at home. Then they went down at Georgia Tech. They won two or three at Georgia Tech. And that might hold a little bit more significance than it did then, because Georgia Tech ended up being the regular season champion. Then they sweep Miami, which that was a big series at the time, because Miami was probably the hottest team in the league, right? They'd won, what, 10 straight league games before they came to Charlottesville. And then, you know, you finish up with two or three at Virginia Tech. Winning at your rival is not an easy thing to do. Virginia took two or three against the Hokies. So they've played their way back not only into the conversation, but onto the right side of the bubble. And I think that's just a credit to probably a team that's been in some pressure pack situations before. You think about the nucleus of the roster, and I'm talking like Jacob Ferenc, Jay Woolfolk, Eric Becker, Hayden Teal, and Henry Ford, of course, Harrison Didowick. The bulk of that group, right, has been to Omaha once. Some of those guys have been to Omaha twice. And then like for Wolf Folk and who's been on this team for going back to 2021 or excuse me, 2022 when they went down to Greenville. Like they have some really good postseason experience. They've been in some tough spots before. I think that probably helped weather the storm a little bit and knowing like the team has enough talent. Eventually it's going to get figured out. It just needs to get figured out more quickly now that you're into a mid-April and not yet locked up a potential NCAA tournament spot. So I think it's a credit to that group coming together and figuring it out. Like, hey, everything's got to get going in the right direction now, or it's going to be too late. That group never panicked. They kind of stayed steady, and that's a tribute to Oak, of course, but also the team.
Yeah, and I've kind of updated these stats, but through the first 23 games this season, Virginia was hitting .287 as a lineup with 20 home runs, 6.4 runs per game. Last 26 games, and obviously there's a key divider in that moment because that's when Brian O'Connor made the switch to put Aiden Teal at the top lineup,
Yeah.
move Henry Gotbat down, play Jacob Ferentz a little bit more. They started hitting .329 with 47 home runs and 9 runs per game. So that's a little bit more the offense that you were expecting to see from Virginia. I know we talked about some really high expectations in the preseason because we thought they could reach that level. But this looks like the offense that you saw last year from Virginia, which is a very good offense. So maybe you didn't get the full season performance out of them, but it does seem like this offense has come around. And I think just with the pitching performances that we've seen in recent weeks, especially from Jay Wilfook, 2 earned runs combined in his last two
Start.
starts against Miami and
Yeah.
Virginia Tech. Obviously, that came on one swing against Virginia Tech with a home run. And then Tomas Valančius, the freshman, started off the season really well, went through a really bumpy patch in beginning of ACC play, but he has finished the year really well as a true freshman for the staff. And so it looks like you have two guys really locked in there as starters, and they have some options outside of that. We can talk about that a little bit more, but it seems like this roster has kind of finally started to figure out some of the things that maybe we saw at the beginning of the season for them. You mentioned the NCAA tournament. D1 baseball, like you said, had them as one of the last four teams in. Going to the Los Angeles Regional against UCLA and UC Irvine in there. So that brings up some memories for Virginia fans. What do you think needs to happen, I guess, to lock up that bid? I mean, we talked all last couple of weeks of the season, it was just win out the rest of your ACC series. Don't drop any meaningless midweeks. They got a little help there because the George Mason game was canceled, so they couldn't drop that game. But what needs to happen down in Durham? I know Brian O'Connor feels like they don't need to get anything done down in Durham, but what do you think?
Yeah, O'Connor today, Monday, as we're recording, he had said, he thought the regular season resume was good enough, right? 6 of 9 ACC series victories, 5 games over .500 in the league, a sixth place finish in the league. That's going to have what, 9 or 10 bids, probably 10. And that should be good enough, is kind of how he felt. I think, right? I think you probably need help. Other outside factors to help lock in that bid. In addition, right, you're probably rooting for chalk as the other conference tournaments go on, right? You don't want any bid stealers. Like it becomes like the NCAA basketball, where you're looking at bid stealers and potential leagues that could get two in instead of one or three in instead of two, based on maybe some upsets in the conference tournament. So you're rooting for chalk across the country. And then you can't beat around the bush, right? The Notre Dame game is if you end up playing the Irish, right? They still got to beat Boston College, but if you end up playing Notre Dame, it's probably a game you want to win, right? That one kind of differentiates yourself from Notre Dame and vice versa. If Notre Dame were to win that, because in those last four in is both Notre Dame and Virginia, according to D1 baseball at this point, just them projecting. Who knows what the actual committee thinks, but D1 baseball, those guys do a good job and are pretty plugged in there. So to me, that game, and I think it speaks to O'Connor starting Jay Wolfolk in that game and how in the importance of it, right? You're gonna go with your veteran. You're gonna go with the guy who you think gives you the best chance to win, and that's Wolfolk. He's your older guy, right? All those great postseason performances last year in a regional, super regional, how he's pitched down the stretch. If you didn't think Wednesday night was important, you might be inclined to save him. But Wednesday, all of a sudden, you're looking at that and you're thinking, man, that's a pretty big game, especially if you end up playing Notre Dame.
I think it's a situation where maybe Brian O'Connor thinks they have done enough, but don't leave it to chance. Go ahead, get into that game, win that game, and then you can rest easy and just go out and play baseball on Friday if you get that far. It does seem like a situation where because Virginia and Notre Dame are so closely tied on the bubble right now, and you're gonna possibly get that matchup, that it's really going to put that into context. I mean, if Notre Dame loses to Boston College, maybe you're having a different conversation at that point, because maybe there's not as much pressure on Virginia since Notre Dame's already lost in an earlier round to a team that's one of the only two teams in the ACC that's below Virginia in RPI at this point. Checking again today after the weekend series, Virginia's at 55.
But I don't
Notre
know, right?
Dame.
Like, if it's Boston College that gets through, you already lost a three-game series to them.
Yeah,
Two or three to one of the
it's a
so
chance for to even that out a little bit.
even that out, and maybe the tournament committee doesn't look at that as partially.
It's gonna be really interesting, and it's interesting because this is the first single elimination bracket tournament that we've had. So you're interested already just to see, all right, what does this format do? How do teams plan with this? Does it create more chances for teams to go on a run like so many think it will? Or do we just get some of the top teams in the ACC? I gotta say, looking at, I mean, we were texting back and forth looking at the ACC standings down the stretch there, and like, this is as close an ACC standings as I've seen. I mean, what, every team ends with double digit losses in the conference. There's
There
no
was no
clear,
dominant. There was
there's
no
no
dominant
dominant
team.
team. Yeah.
I mean, for a while, like Clemson was pretty far ahead of the pack, but they struggled down the stretch a little bit until winning a series at Pittsburgh this past weekend. Georgia Tech finished really strong. North Carolina's been good. Florida State has been really good at times with their pitching, but even those two teams seem to have a dip at certain moments. There's no one dominant team. The league's really, really competitive.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating week down in Durham. I do think, kind of summing it up, Virginia, Notre Dame, if you win that game on Wednesday, if it is Virginia, Notre Dame, then you're resting easy. You think you have a pretty good safe lock on your NCAA tournament hopes. If not, you're sweating it out looking at those other tournaments around the country, looking if there's any bid thieves or anything else like that. Real quick, just kind of looking at the rest of it. So, the winner of that, six seed game on Wednesday night would face the number three seed UNC on Friday at 7 p.m. From there, obviously, it's the two seed Florida State, and then you get to the championship game. So it's an interesting, like we just said, like there's not a lot of division, and there's more parity, I feel like, this year in the ACC, and a lot of these teams haven't played each other either. And there's a lot of canceled games and canceled series throughout the season, so you don't really know what you're going to get going down this weekend to Durham. What is your prediction, I guess, for the week for UVA, maybe the ACC tournament as a whole?
I guess just first and foremost, like the way the bracket sets up for Virginia is pretty fascinating, because assuming, some chalk holds and Virginia would play. Well, they would play North Carolina if they advance Wednesday, but assuming they would play Florida State after that if they keep winning, like you're going through the two teams you lost to in Omaha last year,
Yeah.
right? And that always adds some intrigue, and two of the better teams in the country this year, which would certainly bolster your resume and maybe move you even further up the pecking order in terms of the NCAA tournament. I think Virginia will win Wednesday. I think throwing Jay is probably the right, not probably, is the right move if you want to give yourself the best chance to win Wednesday. Whatever happens after that, I think only helps Virginia, depending, how, assuming they play well. Whatever happens result-wise, I think only help UVA. For the tournament, I mean, I just think the top four teams have such an advantage pitching-wise,
Yeah.
because you're so rested. That I would probably think Florida State with their pitching is probably the team to beat going into the tournament, even though Georgia Tech's the one seed.
And they played well in that series to close the season against North Carolina. So yeah, Florida
Yeah.
State looks really good. Georgia Tech, like, they seem to have that kind of it factor, and it's kind of like the big theme, the Danny Hall retirement
Yeah.
tour.
It was fun, yeah.
So they've got a little bit of magic to them. So I'd be interested to see if they can kind of make some magic in the NCAA, in the ACC tournament. See about the NCAA tournament later. But yeah, I think it'd be a really interesting week. I do think Virginia will get that game, and just kind of take whatever they can get from there. So the question is, after we've looked at these last couple series, Bradley Hodges has been the starter for game two for them. Hasn't been a good run for him. He had a great, first weekend starting against Georgia Tech, and then the last 2 weeks against Miami and Virginia Tech have not gone as well. Are you on the same wavelength? Do you think they'll go with, Wolfolk then Valinkas on a Friday, and then I guess, I mean, who do you have as a third guy at this point? Is it Hodges? Do you go back to Evan Blanco, Bryson Moore? Who do you go to?
Yeah, I think you'd have to go Valinkas, right? For that second game if you get through Wednesday. I just think he deserves to pitch in the, in a whatever it would be, a semifinal game. If you get to Friday.
Quarterfinal.
And then after that, if you get, or excuse me, that would be a quarterfinal game
Yeah,
Friday. If you
quarterfinal.
get to the semis and the championship, part of me thinks you would probably turn back to Blanco, right? Older guy, been in the
Yeah.
situations before. I don't know. With the way Hodges has pitched lately, it's certainly a question mark.
Yeah.
Bryson Moore's pitched really well the other day, but gosh, he's not stretched out yet completely to probably be a starter.
I mean, that's probably a bullpen game at that point.
Yeah, I
Maybe
mean,
you start
maybe
more,
you go
get
with a
an inning or
combination of
two.
Blanco. Yeah, and then if you get to Sunday, who knows?
Chris Arroyo.
Chris Arroyo. Maybe you'd throw, maybe you just go bullpen, like straight bullpen day,
Yeah,
you know?
this is what Brian O'Connor always tells us. You plan for the game you got, and then you kind of work with what you got after that,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just what it's what you can do. If you get to Sunday, you're already probably feeling really good. So,
Playing with house money at that point. All right.
exactly.
It's gonna be an interesting week. I would probably, Virginia has a good chance against North Carolina. I don't know if I would pick them to go much further than that. I think if they can lock things up on Wednesday, I think they'll pretty a pretty happy team coming out of that, just getting into the NCAA tournament. Then we'll see what happens from there. I mean, everyone wants to keep bringing back the 2015 comparisons about how the season started and how it ended and everything, but time will only tell if they can ride some of this momentum. You'd rather be the hot team at the end of the year than the
No
hot team at the
doubt.
beginning of the year.
No
You can ask
doubt.
people down in Blacksburg how being the hot team at the beginning of the year goes.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into our football talk now, going through this depth chart. We're gonna take a quick break here in the Who's On podcast. We'll be right back to talk about that.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
All right, let's talk some UVA football, and we're going to go through the depth chart at this point in the offseason. You're thinking that maybe Virginia is coming to, closer to a close in this transfer portal, but as we're recording here, Virginia picks up another transfer and former Georgia Tech and Utah defensive back Keenan Johnson. That brings UVA up to 32 total transfers between the winter and spring, 13 in the spring alone. Seven of those are defensive backs. So it's been a very busy time. Number 23 ranked class on 24/7 Sports. Take it or leave it with the transfer portal rankings. I've talked about that ad nauseum on here on the podcast. But Greg, this is going to come out with an article that I'm posting on thesaber.com with just kind of an outlook for what the depth chart looks like after all these additions. It's kind of a new look roster. So kind of where are we at this point in the offseason? But we're going to talk a little bit about What we would surmise as the depth chart at this point, you're going to go through fall camp. Everyone's got to battle for positions and everything. But let's start right at the top. We'll start with quarterback. Is it safe to say, Chandler Morris, with Daniel Kalen behind him?
Yeah, I think that's about as easy as it gets when it comes to this depth chart.
That's probably the easiest position. They did lose Gavin Frakes to the transfer
They
portal,
did.
so probably the third quarterback now you're looking at. Bjorn Jorgensen coming in as a true
Yeah.
freshman. You got Grady Broesterhouse still in the program.
Old gears around will be around.
Cole Gear. So a couple other options there. You hope you don't have to get to your third quarterback is kind of the
Yeah.
bottom line. But yeah, I think Chandler Morris probably a safe bet there. Running back, they did add two more players in this. Actually, kind of interesting at this point. Isaiah Gustav has not been formally added to the roster. He's not officially signed yet. Some things going on there. They also added Harrison Whaley from Wyoming, formerly Northern
Good
Illinois as
player.
well.
Yeah.
We'll start with this. Xavier Brown, I think we both agree, is probably the starter at the top of the depth chart for UVA. Are you going a different direction here?
I honestly think with the way Jamari Taylor impressed this past spring, I think he might start. I
Okay.
mean, he might be the guy atop the pecking order. Maybe Brown starts. I think Taylor might end up being the top guy. That's just a gut type
Yeah.
feeling. I maybe it's different from last year though, where it's like last year was a true 1-2,
Yeah.
right? Like Kobe Pace was the starter and Xavier got the kind of complementary type
Spelled him, yeah.
of plays. I think it'd be a little bit more, evenly split carries, that sort of deal. So to me, I right now I think Taylor would he's proven he could be a workhorse type back, take on a bunch of carries. I just think he with his age, his experience, being a guy who ran for over 1,000 yards last year, I think he may start as the top guy.
I was really impressed with what Jamari Taylor did. I honestly just come into it though. I think maybe in the spring, returning guys, especially guys coming off an injury like Xavier Brown was, they have a little less to prove. So
Yeah.
it's more on the transfer, the guy coming in to kind of take that moment. And Jamari Taylor certainly did that. I don't think there's a guy in this backfield with the kind of the big play material ability as Xavier Brown has, but. We were talking about this before. You really caught me on to Harrison Whaley. I went back and looked at this guy's film, and boy, like he has got, he's similar build to Jamari Taylor, 5'9", about 210 or something like that. So kind of a shorter, more
Yeah.
compact build. But he broke off some big runs against, Texas
Texas.
and,
Yeah.
Boise State, some good
Yeah.
teams out there, when he was playing for Wyoming. So I think he's a pretty under the radar guy that not a lot of people were looking at his transfer coming in.
Yeah, I think he maybe some people think, oh, they're just adding depth. Like, nah, he's a guy that could carry the ball for them. He was hurt a little bit last year, which is why he only played in the four games and was able to maintain his red shirt in order to play this season. But certainly somebody who could help the Cavaliers this fall. And I think too, like with what they've done at running back, they've protected themselves from the situation they got in last year when Noah Vaughn and Chris Tyree were having to carry the ball against Virginia Tech. Like they've got four legit running backs they can hand the ball off to now.
With Gustav, have you heard anything on his situation?
What I've been told is it everything's going to work out. That's what I've been
That's all you
told,
need to know.
and that's kind of where what I've been told at this point.
Yeah. All right. Wide receiver. I think there's one kind of locking in stone here with Trell Harris. The other
Yes.
ones, I kind of, it could go either way. I have Jamal Edrin, kind of as one of the
Yeah.
other guys there. I thought he actually looked really good in the spring game. Kind of got overlooked by some of the other guys, but
Yeah.
he was solid. Had a good connection with Chandler Morris. The position I'm most interested in is that slot spot. Where do they go there? Because
Yeah.
there's a lot of guys kind of at the same level that I think could vie for that position.
I mean, Cam Ross has caught a lot of passes in his career, right? I mean, from his time at UConn, the time at James Madison, he's caught a lot of passes. What Josiah Abdullah did this spring to turn heads, I think lets you know he's gonna have some type of role for UVA. And then there's Cam Courtney and Sudarian Harrison too. And it's kind of a four-man jockeying for that top job. And who knows? Maybe Abdullah takes over the role eventually full time. But I think Cam Ross, with his experience, his veteran, maybe it starts there, and then you see how it works. Camp Courtney certainly have a say. I think those three would be kind of who I have, in tight competition for the job at this point. I don't want to discount Za'Darian Harrison. He's been in the program, but it just kind of feels to me like it's going to be maybe Ross to start, and then maybe the one of the younger guys takes it over.
So with Harrison, that's interesting because he missed, a good chunk of the spring. So we didn't get to see him, especially in that spring game when some of those other guys looked pretty good out there. Is it just injury? Because I thought at times, I was wanting to see more of him out there on the field.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back 2 years ago, right? You thought you were seeing the jump start in what would be a long career, but he's going on his third year now, and it's you're starting to wonder, like, is he going to be the guy, right? The first year he sat behind Malik Washington, no harm, no foul there, right? I mean, good player, excellent player, who had a career year at UVA. Last year, with the way Tyree struggled, you thought maybe Harrison could get on the field. Of course, he dealt with some injury last year too, particularly the hamstring, right? If I'm remembering correctly. So to me, like, that's a little bit of an issue. So I don't know. Maybe it's just the way I get a kind of feel and a sense for it. A lot of things to play out, and there's no saying he couldn't win the job. But just I think with what UVA brought in, not only in Cam Ross, but with the young guy in Abdullah, who, when he committed, was the highest rated recruit of the Tony Elliott era. Like, to me, he showed in spring, right? Like, he can compete. So maybe he only gets better as the summer goes along.
I am interested how soon they kind of turn the keys over at him in that slot position, because it's kind of feels like a win, not an if situation with him, just because of the talent that he's shown already. I don't know if it'll be game one, August 30th against Coastal Carolina, but that slot position probably the most difficult for me on the roster, just to kind of sort out who's going to be the guy there. Moving down, tight end, got Dakota Twitty atop right there. Pretty
Simple.
simple. Sage Ennis coming back from that ACL injury. Hopefully he's there so you can get that blocking tight end. That's an element they missed down the stretch. And then John Rogers, probably the third tight end there. Looked really good in the spring game as well.
I'm with you there. The pecking order you have is exactly what I was thinking.
All right. Then we get to this mashup of the offensive line. And we can kind of move through tight end because we got to talk about this for a second here. It looks like two spots you can kind of write down and pin is the center position with Brady Wilson and left guard with Noah Josi. Is there another one that you would write down and pin?
I think McKeelan Thomas plays right tackle for Virginia.
Okay. From
The
Arkansas State
Arkansas State
trees.
transfer. That is a big time addition. He was one of the few kind of plug and play available tackles this spring. I think he plays and is their right tackle.
And obviously, they were missing Monroe Mills, who suffered the injury in the spring, so they needed that kind of guy, and his metrics look pretty good coming out of Arkansas State. So that leaves, your right guard and your left tackle positions. There's a lot of different guys vying for that. You've got the Syracuse transfer David Walaba. You've got Wallace Enamba, who went to New Mexico, Kentucky. Tyshawn Wyatt from JMU. Jack Whitmer's back. Kevin Wigginton, who spent time in Michigan State and Illinois, he was there in the spring. Those are just a couple of the other names. I know Ben York was a young guy that's kind of up and coming that they're high on. But who fills out that left tackle and right guard spot? I should mention the guys I have right now are Mikhail Boley and Drake Metcalf.
Yeah, I think left tackle, the competition will probably be a three man jockeying for the job between Boley, Walaba, and Unamba. And then at right guard, I think it's kind of a two man, maybe three man competition between Wigginton and Metcalf at right guard, and then Wyatt possibly, depending on how healthy he is. Remember, he finished the spring a little banged up, and I'm starting to wonder, right? Because he missed the bulk, right? He missed all of last year, James Madison, due to an injury he suffered the year before. So that's a tough spot for him to be in. trying to come in and compete and win a job with guys who are healthy. Metcalf, of course, coming off an injury too, but he seems to be more on the runway of getting ready to play. To me, that right guard spot, Wyatt or excuse me, Wigginton or Metcalf, and then left tackle, we'll see three-man competition, Woloba, Boldy, Unamba.
Yeah, I only go with Boley and Metcalf just because of the experience playing in the system already, just kind of having that intrinsic knowledge. But yeah, that's gonna be another really interesting kind of battle there to see kind of what happens with those two
Yeah.
spots. We'll go over to the defensive side of the ball now. We'll start defensive tackle. We got the same guys from last year that started off the season with Jameer Carter and Jason Hammond. Is that who you see kind of at top right now?
I think Carter and Britton.
Carter and Britton.
I think Britton played really, really well. And until Hammond gets, at least his feet under himself because he's coming off injury too. Britton
A
got
second
so
shoulder
much.
surgery, too, for Hammond
Yeah,
this offseason.
Britton just got so much better as that season went along. And I think he improved during the spring also, at least from what the coaches have said. So to me, I think Britton and Carter, at least to start. Of course, you got Hammond. You also got the Alabama transfer and Hunter Osborne. And then the Fresno State transfer, Jacob Holmes. I think he's one of the most overlooked transfers in this group that Virginia has added since the winter. He's very, very productive at Fresno. I think he's going to play too. And they want to be deeper up front. So maybe a little bit more than a two deep on the interior of the D line.
And I'll caveat the defensive line. They're going to rotate heavily at kind of all
Yeah.
four of those spots because they
Yeah.
can. And
Yeah.
that's what Tony Elliott's always wanted to do. That's what he saw at Clemson work really well. And that's what he wants to do here, too. T.T. Jones is also playing on the interior. He's a guy that got some playing time last year. All right, defensive ends. This was a little difficult for me, but I've got Fisher K-Mac and Kazim Moore. Which way do you see them going?
I've got K-Mac at one end spot and then Mitchell Melton, the Ohio State transfer, at the other.
He was the other one that was kind of up there, yeah.
Billy Kadelka behind K-Mac, and then Kazim Moore, Mekhi Buchanan behind Melton. And I'm guessing Rickert will play maybe that end spot like K-Mac and Kadelka.
Yeah. Hey, Rickard's an interesting one. Daniel Rickard from Tennessee Tech, you know, kind of wasn't a position you saw them adding, but more of an
No.
opportunity guy, I guess. You know, he's had
Yeah.
been very productive at the FCS level. Yeah, and this is again, that's going to be a position that gets shuffled through a lot. Linebacker, who do you have lining up next to Cam Robinson? Because you can kind of
You'd go
write
either
that
way.
check. Yeah.
You go either way with James Jackson or Trey McDonald. Trey McDonald played well too when he was given, more of an opportunity while filling in for James Jackson last year. But they're both coming off injury and off-season surgery, so that'll be interesting. But I think both will play. I think, those will be your primary three linebackers: Robinson, McDonald, Jackson. Maybe Maddox Marcellus plays a little bit. I think those are kind of the four names you need to know at linebacker. Landon Danley, I think you'll see on special teams and get the occasional run at linebacker. But other than that, I think those three are the primary. Maybe some Marcellus, maybe some Danley.
I think Marcellus gets a little more run because he's got athleticism that, you know,
Yeah.
the other two guys, Jackson and McDonald, just don't have.
Right.
And that's, you know, he's better than he's an upgrade over what they had last year with Dorian Jones playing that spot.
Agreed.
So I think he'll get a little bit more runtime out there and definitely be a factor on special teams. All right, we talked about at the top. They've added seven defensive backs in this class just this spring. We'll start at corner.
Your guess is as good as mine, pal.
I mean, it's who do you like the most coming out of these transfers right now?
Well, you've got Jordan Robinson. He was the first commit in this spring cycle, former Cincinnati, Kentucky corner, and Emmanuel Carnley too from Miami and Arizona. I think those two, that they're your 6'1", 6'2", very tall, lanky corners, that kind of fit the mold of exactly what the defensive coordinator John Rudzinski and the cornerbacks coach Karome Cox wanted to see at that position. So to me, those two are probably in line for serious playing time. And then, you look at Donovan Platt coming in from Army. I think he's one to watch, highly coveted by Virginia. So I think at corner, that's kind of how I see it. Jamarik Morris, don't want to forget him. Another one of those longer, lanky corners. I think those guys are your corners. I think that allows Pravard to continue to play nickel after he was forced to bump out to corner following the injury to Jam Jackson. So that to me is what's interesting with the cornerback group.
Yeah, I think you're underselling Jordan Robinson listed at 6'4" and Emmanuel
Yeah, my
Quigley
bad.
listed at 6'3".
I've looked at a lot of these height and weights over the last month, with corners and safeties, and they're all starting to blend together.
Was gonna
But
say I
I
haven't
understand what
seen
you're saying.
a corner duo with that kind of size, so don't want to
No.
undersell that. Yeah, and then Dre Walker, obviously he's dealt with injuries a lot. You're kind of seeing, wondering, can he kind of get himself back into that conversation? We'll see what Keenan Johnson, the new
Yeah.
addition, where he kind of fits in this too. Who else do you think could factor in at nickel with Brevard?
Yeah, maybe Platt. Like he's a little bit smaller,
That's
right?
yeah.
That kind of fits that mold if you're looking at that. And then I think those are your primary guys, and maybe one of those other guys, maybe one of those taller guys can bump over
Yeah.
if you're trying to figure out nickel. And then at safety, you got just a horde of guys.
Let's get into safety, because we disagreed on this before when we were talking, and not disagree, but just had different thoughts. Free safety, Jonas Sanker's spot, that's kind of locked up with Devin Neal. They brought him in to
Yeah.
play that position, and that's what he's going to play. Strong safety, it's really like, is Antonio Clary healthy?
Yeah.
I think that's the big thing. If he's healthy, I mean, he was on his way to having an all-ACC season type of season last year.
I think though too, maybe you don't, even if he is healthy, like maybe you don't want to run him out there every single
Yeah.
rep
Yeah.
from day one. And that's maybe why you bring in a guy like DeMarcus Crosby, who was super productive at both Sam Houston and New Mexico State, was an all CUSA guy at Sam Houston, and was New Mexico State's second leading tackler this past fall. Former junior college player in Texas at Kilgore. To me, he's someone that profiles as like a guy who can play right away, just based on all he's done at various stops. Someone who can come in, learn a playbook, not be, overwhelmed at the situation. I think he's someone who can certainly play. Christian Charles too, right?
Well, and that kind of brings you to the spur conversation. And what's the difference between the nickel and the spur? Because I think that's kind of a point of confusion for some fans.
Yeah, the nickel, you're probably looking at more passing situations, right? The spur is more of an every down type of player, whereas the nickel corner is your third and eight or longer,
Yeah.
second and 17 for some reason. That type of player who can come in off the bench and be an extra cornerback to cover in a slot when you have a good idea, good gauge that the opponent's going to pass the ball. To me, the spur is more of that safety hybrid linebacker. Now, like last year, Virginia had a spur that could cover too,
Yeah,
right?
you didn't
Corey
have to take
Thomas,
Corey Thomas off the field.
you didn't have to take him off the field. That's a luxury. I mean, you might not have that in any, you might not have that specific skill set in any one guy this year. So that's why you're starting to see maybe the difference in, nickel corner versus spur, and how Virginia could be multiple and run guys on and off the field to play two different roles.
Well, when you have seven new defensive backs coming into the program, you got to find different roles and spots for
Yeah.
them to
Oh,
come
yeah.
into. So you mentioned Christian Charles there, the transfer from Tennessee. He's kind of a guy I thought of as a spur.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else that kind of fits into that role?
Now, when I talked to Crosby, he was pretty confident he was locked into true safety.
Yeah.
And in the past, some of those guys have been interchangeable. But to me, that's kind of what I'm thinking is Crosby at safety, Charles at spur, and see what happens from there. Maybe they can move one of their guys in-house to spur, whether it's Caleb Hardy or Ethan Minner.
I was going to say that's kind of where the returning young kind of crop of safeties in the program already might come into hand. I think Caleb Hardy's seen some time there at Spur in the past.
Yeah.
And then you also have Kiki Adams, who missed the spring. So there's some
Yeah.
young guys in the program. We'll see if they kind of where they fit in. I love Ethan Minner kind of learning that free safety role, though, because I think that could be where he has a future. But I think that sums up the whole depth chart there, Greg. I mean, is there any competition at kicker or punter? I think Will Bettridge and Daniel Sparks are pretty
Nah.
good there.
Yeah, I think so. No, I mean, it's going to be a fascinating summer incorporating, what 12, how many this spring, 12 more newcomer, 12 more transfers this spring. Do I have
I
that
think,
right?
yeah,
Or
well, I
they're
think we're up to
13.
thir we're up to 13 now as of this podcast.
Yeah, third, incorporating 13 more on top of the bunch you brought in during the winter to get past 30 up to 32 now in total. Like that makes for a fascinating time. And I think the competition at left tackle and at running back, like these are some more drastic, serious competitions than Tony Elliott's first 3 years at the helm of UVA.
Well, they're not, and they're also not competitions out of, someone's got to line
Necessity.
up. They're competitions because you got good players that are competing for these spots now, which is,
For sure.
that's a coach's dream. That's what you want to go into fall camp. You want to see guys that are competing for a spot out there. All right, you can read the full kind of depth chart breakdown that I do over on the saber.com. You can also catch all of Greg's work as he gets ready to head down to Durham for a we'll see if it's a long week or just a busy week. We'll see what that looks like, Greg. But thanks again for jumping on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Preston.
All right, that'll do it for the Who's On podcast. Again, check out the saber.com for all of the latest there and for the latest Who's On podcast and all our other podcasts on the Saber Podcast Network. We will see you all later next week, right after Selection Monday on Memorial Day. We'll see where the Cavaliers end up, if they end up. We'll see you next time.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.